Good day, and welcome to the Hospital Public Reporting conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Marguerite Schaefer. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our first Hospital Public Reporting call. The slides that we're going to cover were sent out to everyone on the listserv. If you haven't gotten them, we will forward them to you. You can get in touch with us after the meeting. We decided to schedule these calls on a monthly basis because we do get continued questions, and we all know, as you do too, that there are many staffing changes that take place. We get continuous updates from CMS, so the staff here at iPro want to take a proactive approach, and we decided the monthly conference calls would be a good way to address ongoing concerns. The objectives for today, our overall objective is really for this first meeting to give you a basic overview of a lot of information. I'm going to talk for a few minutes about the ACE scope of work, and then I'm going to turn it over to Karen, Karen O'Leary, and I'm sure you're all familiar with Karen and know her well. And she's going to give an overview on hospital public reporting, QNET, validation, the validation process, Hospital Compare website, and then we'll take your questions and we'll attempt to answer all of those. For some of you, this may be very dry because you may know a lot of this information, but we did want to start at the beginning. We wanted to give a pretty good overview, and then going forward in the upcoming months, we are going to have conference calls on each one of the clinical topics and address all the questions that you may have regarding, abstraction, validation, et cetera. So that is our plan. As many of you know, CMS has set the bar quite high, this scope of work, and the focus of our work will be on transformational change. That being said, sounds great, but everyone seems to be kind of using that term, but I don't think anyone really has a clear explanation of what transformational change really is. So I kind of took it from Webster's, and you'll note that to transform something, we must change its composition. And when you think about that type of change, that kind of change has to emanate from the senior management of organizations. And by senior management, I mean the board, CEOs, COOs. Transformational change is not going to happen if it rests on the shoulders of the quality improvement department. It just won't fly. Knowing this, IPRO has set about involving for the first time CEOs in much of the correspondence. We want them to be educated and aware of what is going on in terms of quality improvement and data abstraction and validation. And we hope that this will bring about the added support that you will need to carry out the work that you have to do. We're going to continue over the entire scope of work to communicate directly with senior management in any way that we can, because they really do have to embrace the fact that the quality of care in hospitals can and should be improved upon. They also have to understand that it should be a number one priority. And it's a process that's not going to happen overnight. That all staff within the hospital have to be involved, and systems, not people, need to be improved upon. And that we must work in teams, and I say that very strongly, it's plural. One team, one group within the quality improvement department cannot make the changes that are needed to be made. And we're also going to have to look at the composition of clinical processes as well. So we want to support the work that you're doing and try to address specific issues and customize the quality improvement solutions for individual hospitals by working with you more one-on-one. You're also aware that there's a national effort underway to prepare for the adoption of IT solutions. And right now, it's probably one of the most important transformational changes that is taking place within the medical community. Also, more than ever before, agencies that you kind of, you know, answer to and work with, such as CMS and JACO and various hospital associations and the work that many of you are doing with IHI and others, continues to move in the same direction. So there is a great deal more alignment in the work that we're all doing. So how are we going to facilitate this work? Well, we're working with identified participant groups for this scope of work, meaning that we've identified cohorts of hospitals that have a vision. We've got agreement from their chief executive officers to work with us in a collaborative way. The clinical topic areas that we are working on remain the same: AMI, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical care. There have been additional measures added. They're not public reported measures, but there are additional measures that have been added to all of these topics. The other IPG that is new for this scope of work and extremely important is working with a group of hospitals on the planning for and coming up with a very strategic plan on how to implement and adopt information technology. We're also going to be working directly with critical access and rural hospitals as well for the first time. The clinical areas that we'll be working on with those groups are the same, but there is going to be a special focus for critical access hospitals looking at new ED measures. Those measures have not been formalized as yet, but they're on their way. So what's going to drive all this work? Well, first of all and foremost, I think it's very important that CEOs will play a very big part in driving this. Those with a vision will make it their number one priority. I think the other thing that is going to drive it is financial incentives. Quality is going to be rewarded, as we already know. That's happening now, and it will continue to happen. So it's very important for all of you to fully understand and embrace the work that's going on and being done in quality improvement and public reporting, because they do go hand in hand. We invited you today to attend the meeting or this conference call. We invited the quality improvement staff and our contact and medical records, and we encourage you for the upcoming calls to invite as many of your staff as possible, because, again, it's very important work. The more people that know and understand the work that you're involved in and trying to do, I think the easier everyone's job will be. This isn't something that can be done by a small group of people within the hospital. It's going to take, you know, a village. So I want to thank you very much for listening, and I'm going to turn you over to Karen O'Leary, and Karen is going to take you through the hospital public reporting and all of the other components on the call. Thanks.
Hi, everybody. To begin, I'd like to review the goals of hospital public reporting, and they are basically to drive quality improvement and to help consumers make informed choices and decisions. In short, through public reporting, hospital data then becomes real. Public reporting also helps hospitals to highlight their successes. It has also been noted that hospitals' concerns about their public image and basic feedback about a hospital's performance might be sufficient to motivate improvements. This next slide illustrates the requirements for each of the CMS initiatives, the Hospital Quality Alliance, and the reporting hospital quality data for annual payment update, otherwise known as the RACDPO. The Hospital Quality Alliance, H2A, is voluntary, whereby the RACDPO is required. The Hospital Quality Initiative began as an extension of the three-state public reporting pilot. The three states involved for developing a model for nationwide voluntary reporting were New York, Maryland, and Arizona. All pilot hospitals were then automatically enrolled in the National Voluntary Initiative, now called the HQA, and continue to report. October 2003 was the first publication of the 10 starter set measures on CMS's professional website. That site was www.cms.hhs.gov. Written as part of the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003, affecting all hospitals that are paid under the acute inpatient prospective payment system, hospitals must submit the set of 10 quality measures for each of the fiscal years 2005 through 2007 to receive their full market basket update. That was the requirements for the RACTAPOO. On this next slide, it gives you a illustration, which I'm sure you've all seen, of the measures AMI, heart failure, pneumonia, and SIP, noting that on the left side was the 10 starter, is the 10 starter set measures, and the additional measures for the HQA are listed on the right-hand side. The enrollment requirements for each of the initiatives are as follows. For the HQA, you needed to sign, hospitals needed to sign a pledge of participation form. For the RACTAPOO, it was a notice of participation form that needed to be signed. For both, you need to collect data for all payers and publicly report results for the 10 starter set measures. And you must register and maintain at least one QNET administrator. We at iPro do encourage that you do register more than one QNET administrator. It's very important in case that person is out or gets sick and somebody else in your hospital needs to be able to access QNET and the reports. It's very, very important. The additional requirements for the annual payment update include you need to collect and submit data via your JCO Oryx vendor, or submit your data through CMS's abstraction and reporting tool, otherwise known as the CART tool. Hospitals must submit cases that will be used to calculate the required 10 measures. All data accepted into the warehouse is then subject to validation, and hospitals must pass validation by scoring greater than or equal to 80%. I've included the data transmission timeline for everybody to see. It's pretty much current. The third quarter we just did pass, and the warehouse did lock on February 15th. The next quarter you're looking to get information, your cases into the warehouse by May 15th. And I know that seems like a lot of time, but if you are going through a vendor, you will have to submit the data a little bit earlier because it goes to JCO at a different time frame. Okay, QualityNet Exchange. QualityNet Exchange is the only CMS-approved site for secure communication and data exchange. All hospitals enrolled in public reporting initiatives must register for QNET. Currently, QNET offers access to information related to the HQA, RACTAPOO, CART, and in the future, HCAPS. A large component of the QualityNet Exchange is the capability to generate reports. To access reports, one must log in to the secured page. When you first log on to QNET, it will be a public homepage, and then you'll have to log in as a user to access any reports. For the purpose of today's call, we'll briefly describe the following reports. Reports Viewer, the QIO Clinical Warehouse Submission Reports, the feedback reports, hospital validation reports, annual payment update, and the HQA preview. The reports viewer report. This report allows users to view, print, download, and save reports generated on QNET. I'd like to give an example of this by saying when you generate reports, you don't always have to go in and look at them at the time you're generating them. This reports viewer allows you to see reports that you've downloaded maybe a month ago, 2 weeks ago, a week ago. It actually archives the reports that you have generated. It's very good to know in case somebody should ask for, let's say, a senior management level person asks you about your data. A perfect example of this is the HQA preview data report. That report is only available for 30 days. After the 30 days preview period time is over, you can no longer generate that report. So if you generated it a month ago and then you were asked to attend possibly a board meeting or a quarterly MedExec meeting, and you know you ran this report but you can't remember when, go into this reports viewer report and you'll be able to pull up by date some of the reports that you generated possibly at the time that you were advised to do so. It's a very, very good way to see reports that you have generated over time. Okay. The QIL Clinical Warehouse Submission Reports. These reports provide results only to the direct submitters of data, and those people would be hospitals that use CART. They submit their own data, or vendors. The QIL Clinical Warehouse Feedback Reports. All hospitals should run these reports after every transmission to the clinical warehouse, whether your hospital transmitted using CART or through a vendor. I can't express the importance enough of hospitals running these feedback reports. Question is, why should you run these reports? Well, these reports actually include data that you have submitted through your vendor that was submitted successfully to the clinical warehouse. Just because you sent data through your vendor or through CART doesn't mean it necessarily made it there successfully. And the goal is that you want to get as many cases into the warehouse as you possibly can. The reports that you need to run specifically are the case status summary report, the measure status summary report, the data submission detail report, and facility-only reports. These reports also indicate the number of cases that were accepted or rejected into the warehouse. Should you have any rejections, you want to know about them prior to the warehouse locking. You want to know about the rejection so that you can fix the errors and retransmit them. Hospital validation reports. This is the next set of reports that are available, and I would recommend running the following three in particular. Your case status selection report, which provides a listing of cases being requested from CDAC, and provides an acknowledgement of the cases received by CDAC. Your overall results report, this provides an overall validation score called overall reliability score. And your case detail report, this report displays mismatches on specific cases for validation. This next slide on page 16 shows you an example of a screenshot of a case selection report. It identifies the listing of cases being requested, when the record was requested, submitted, and if CDAC has received each record. You notice in the right-hand column there are 5 Ys on this example. That indicates that this hospital has sent in 5 records and that they were received by CDAC and timely. Another report available can be found under the title of Annual Payment Update Reports. It is called the Affected Provider Participation Status Report. This report provides information about the hospital status and meeting RACTIPU requirements. And on the next slide, I've included an example of a draft version of this report. This report just came out on QNET probably about 2 to 3 weeks ago, and I encourage all hospitals to run this report, and should you have any questions about what you're seeing on your report, please email me or call me. What you need to look at this report for is that you have an active QNET administrator. It's in the top portion of the report. And that, yes, that administrator has a feedback role. The feedback role enables that person to retrieve and run reports. And also to note that you have signed a notice of participation form for the RACTIPU and the date. Last are the HQA preview reports. These reports are available only during the 30-day preview period, and I would advise you to print this report out because they will close out on QNET after the preview period ends. It's simply a 30-day window for you to run a report that illustrates 4 rolling quarters worth of data. And on the weekly at-a-glance, you will be notified when the report has become available to run. The next preview report will be coming out, I do believe, in April. Okay, validation studies. To verify the accuracy of the information collected, each quarter a small sample of the data that the hospitals submit to the QIO clinical warehouse is validated. All hospitals that have submitted abstracted data for 6 or more cases, which are discharges, across the four CMS national inpatient topics during the previous quarter are included in this process. For each hospital, cases from across the four inpatient topics are randomly selected for validation review by the CDAC. The sample requested is five medical records from each hospital. After hospitals submit their five records to CDAC, CDAC then abstracts them. A hospital re-abstracts them after you. A hospital's data is considered to be validated if the overall validation agreement score is greater than or equal to 80%. If the overall validation rate is less than 80, the hospital has 10 business days to submit an appeal. At this time, I just wanted to give a couple of tips when submitting your records to CDAC. And please do share this information with your medical records department, as well as they probably receive many, many requests in a month or a quarter. Each quarter, CDAC receives thousands of records. Be sure to follow any instructions to submit records correctly and timely. Include the appropriate face sheet for each chart. Face sheets, number one, are green in color. Don't send a copy of this. Number two, attach one sheet for each record and make sure that the cover sheet corresponds to the correct medical record. And number three, the V at the end of the project abbreviation number on the green cover sheet identifies this as a record for validation. On the next slide, I've just included a sample screenshot of what the green cover sheet looks like, and you can see there's a circle around the project abbreviation number, noting that the last digit is a V for validation. For the validation appeal process, hospitals must have failed validation at a score less than 80%, not less than an equal, just less than 80%. You must discuss your case detail report, which indicates your mismatches, prior to submitting an appeal. You are to complete the appeal form, Part 1, and send it to me at iPro. Remember, all of the above must be completed within 10 days of your score being released, and that is 10 business working days. So if your result comes out on Monday, say it came out on this past Monday, Monday the 20th, your appeal and communication to me must be complete by the following Friday, which is March 3rd. So it's 10. It's a Monday through Friday and then another Monday through Friday. Lastly, I'd like to talk about the Hospital Compare website. This is where hospital data is publicly reported to consumers. I've included the URL link for you to share with other staff in your hospital in case they have not seen this site. The first web release of hospital performance reports for the 10 measures, 10 starter set measures, occurred in November of 2004. This date is specific to RACTAPU data, which is the 10 measures only. Data refreshes quarterly on the site. It includes the 10 starter set measures and any additional measures as part of the HQA or the optional measures if you're still collecting them. There is a 30-day preview period prior to the publication, and validation results are not currently published on this site. The last slide just gives you some resources and links in case you should have any questions. Also, please feel free to call me or Peggy Schaefer if you have any questions, and I'll return it to Peggy. Lisa?
The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And once again, for any questions, press star 1. We'll pause a moment. At this time, I show no questions standing by. I'd like to remind anyone to ask a question, press star 1. And we'll pause another moment.
Okay. While we're waiting for questions, Karen, just wanted to point something out to everyone. On the last slide, the Hospital Punk Reporting Resources, the last bullet indicates
a telephone number for CDAC medical record inquiries. I do want to point it out because a lot of hospitals do call me with questions about their requests. Did they get their request? Did they not get their request for records? This is a number that you can call and actually have somebody help you. If you did not receive your request, they may also be able to fax a copy to you. So it's a great number. It's a great resource.
And we do have some questions standing by. We'll go first to Katie O'Leary, Unity Health Systems.
Karen, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great. For that green face sheet that you said not to send a copy, the original goes back to CDAC?
Right.
Okay.
I would absolutely retain a copy for yourself.
Yes.
Just keep the copy for yourself.
Will do. Thank you.
Okay.
Rosemary Kyle, St. Francis Hospital.
Hi. I have a question in regards to the validators. Who validates them? Because we've been fortunate we haven't had to appeal.
Uh-huh.
But we found errors when we get back the validation to us that I can't figure out where they got the data from. And, you know, the last validation period, it was in regards to an ejection fraction that I went through the chart, and I don't know where they got the information from, and I feel that we abstracted the case correctly.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, you know...
Well, I know that they do have... No, I mean, I can't speak for the exact process, but I do know that they do have, you know, a whole process, and they do have inter-rater reliability and gold standard testing and all of that, which they do. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that they never make a mistake because that never happens. But
it almost looked like they had the wrong chart.
I don't think
yeah.
that it happens.
And sometimes, Rosemary, in the educational comments column, which is probably what you're talking about,
right.
that's done by that separate third department within CDAC, which is the adjudication department. And it could be that they made an error.
That's the part we couldn't understand, that part.
Yeah, you might want to email that to me so I can put an inquiry in, even
okay.
though you passed.
Okay.
Just to get clarification that you're not crazy.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, I realize we passed, but what if we hadn't passed and I have to appeal on something that should have been correct to begin with?
Right.
That's the thing, you know. So that's my question.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Gabrielle Keenan, Benedictine Hospital.
Yes?
Hi, Karen. Have you read the GAO study report on the recommendations for changes to CMS on the validation process and the number of statistically correct charts that they're reviewing?
Yeah, I have taken a look at that. Yes.
I didn't read it completely, but I just wondered if it's going to fly. I suspect it will.
Well, those recommendations were put in strongly from a number of sources, hence the report was written in that manner. We will absolutely keep you up to date. That report just came out, and we'll see what happens. They're going to have to answer to it.
Right, because it'll go from 5 records to 50, I believe.
Yeah, it's huge for resources. I can hear you, your underlining feeling on that.
And as well, it's something that they have to consider, too, because it is a great deal more involved and a lot more work.
Sure, it'll take more resources on their end.
Oh, absolutely, all the way around. It has a major impact. So, you know, they'll take them, you know, under advisement and look at it and see what can be done. But certainly, you know.
We'll wait till the next version of the Federal Registry comes out to see if we get some more clarification.
Okay. Now, Mary Ellen has a question also, if she may.
Yep.
Hi, Karen. Are they looking down the road to make the data dictionary a little bit more user-friendly, you know, as far as actually having a computerized version? You know, right now the manual, you know, going through these constant updates is just, it's, you know, very not user-friendly. It's very difficult to find information, have to search. And I don't know, you know, are there plans down the road to eventually look at that?
Not that we know of. And we do appreciate, you know, how difficult it is. It's voluminous, and it, you know, certainly from a quality improvement perspective, it's good that they do the updates, but I do know that it does challenge everyone to keep abreast of the changes. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of paper. And we could probably, you know, put it in for a suggestion and see if anybody else, I'm sure others have suggested the same thing. I just don't know if, and I just came back from a major meeting and nobody really mentioned, you know, putting that, you know, making those electronic. But
also,
it's a suggestion,
you know,
we will make.
You know, the frequently asked question publications.
Right.
Will that be updated again soon?
It probably will be.
They're helpful.
There's a lot of buzz about that, and it's been put under the microscope, let's say, about the efficacy of the QNET Quest as a whole.
Okay.
Penny Distance, St. Peter's Hospital.
We had a question. This is Eileen Tubby, colon, at St. Pete's with Penny. We had a question about if you've gotten any more information about the market basket update for 2007, and if not, do you have any idea when we'll be hearing about that?
Well, we've heard a few things. There's been nothing definite. The only thing that I can tell you is probably by June we'll know for sure. But there is talk, of course, of adding more measures, HCAPs, but I'm not really at liberty at this point in time to say because nothing has been, you know, fully determined yet.
Okay. I have one other question. The IPGs.
Yes.
When are they going to start?
Probably soon. The recruitment is closed.
Yeah, we got that. I'm just curious because a couple months ago we sent the stuff in and hadn't heard anymore, and I was just curious when what's going on with that.
So that's the that's the recruitment is closed. So that'll be shortly.
Do you think it'll start in like the next month or so?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Norm O'Kahey, Lawrence Hospital Center.
Hi. Hi, Karen. I had a question about the HCAP study.
Yeah.
And when is that going to be mandatory that we do it through CMS, or will we still be able to do it through our own vendor? I'm kind of very confused on that issue.
Yeah, it is through your own vendor. It is not directly with CMS, nor is it through us, because we're not a vendor to administer the survey. There will be the first public reporting will be in late 2007, and there will be 2 months worth of a dry run with your vendor. I would encourage you to contact them. I don't know if you're using Press Ganey or whoever you're using.
Yeah, we use Press Ganey.
Uh-huh. I do believe they had a call last week. You might want to get in touch with them.
Okay.
A preparation call, I have heard.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
I'd like to remind everyone, for questions, press the star key followed by the digit 1. We'll go next to Susan Vitolans, Northeast Health.
Hi, Karen. It's Sue. I just have a question about the validation process. And there was a call the other day in which we asked a question about working diagnosis of pneumonia and some questions about that. And they couldn't answer our question.
That was CMS?
Yeah.
The open door?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I'm just wondering, how do we get an answer about this? Or, you know, they're saying if it's in a working diagnosis, anywhere's in a working diagnosis, even if the patient got absolutely no treatment and, you know, the diagnosis wasn't pneumonia, it needs to be included. And I think people need to relook at that because it's not a fair thing. So I was wondering, what avenue do we have? Where do we need to take that? Who can we write to? Who can we complain to?
Well, I unfortunately was not on the call. However, you know, you might want to email Peggy Schaefer here, who's on the call,
okay,
the specifics of kind of what the question, how the question was asked, what the question was.
Okay.
And we can kick it up from here.
Okay.
Because it is a national issue. It's not just New York hospitals
right,
having issue with it. And a few months back, they did speak about scoring those cases just on the parent element, not with the children elements, the child elements, which would really help out everybody's score. should you answer that question incorrectly. Mm-hmm. But we haven't heard further on it, and I invite you to email Peggy with it.
Okay, I didn't know who I should go to. Thanks very much.
And we'll try and get the information as soon as possible. I'm going to be talking with Dr. Bratzler, and he is probably one of the most informed individuals who works for another QIO but also works very closely with CMS, because there have been some revisions on that issue of pneumonia diagnoses, and I'll get that information out to you as soon as I can.
All right, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. But if you could give me the specifics of the case that you're referring to, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, actually, we did appeal it in the last validation thing, even though I know they're not going to overturn it, but I just felt on principle we appealed it. But I'll send you the details.
Great, thank you.
Susan Bucker, Northern Dutchess Hospital.
Hi, Karen. It's Marie. I'm here with Susan. How are you?
Hi, good.
Question for you on the feedback reports. When we send our, we do our feedback reports,
yeah.
And we get back the report that says, okay, we have extreme values, or we have data that looks like it could be wrong. Then we go in and we look at those charts, and indeed, it's correct. What are we supposed to do?
Are you talking about the errors or the rejections?
Yes.
Which, the error or the rejections?
No, when we get, like, the extreme values, the one report has the extreme value. It shows the column on the right, and it says, this value seems extreme for this measure.
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with that term.
Okay.
But I can look into it.
Okay. And I have one that I can share with you.
Okay.
And show you.
That would be easier if we get to look at it.
Okay.
If you can email that to me, like if you could save it and transmit it over to me.
Okay.
Or I can run report for you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Nancy Valentine, Jacoby Medical Center.
Hi there. I think I can answer that extreme value question.
Oh, good.
I'm not sure, but if I remember correctly, that just means it's just like a heads up. This value is, you know, greater than it should be. Check your data. That's how I've always interpreted.
Oh, yeah, and not as a critical error, something that you absolutely have to fix to get the case into the warehouse.
Right. So if there's nothing.
Oh, okay.
Correct, if you check your data and it's correct, then you just leave it. But you can also find errors that way. It's just a heads up from what I remember.
Oh, okay. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah. My question just also has to do with this working diagnosis of pneumonia on admission. We did get dinged on that one question, and because of that, you know, failed a whole validation at one of our facilities. And, you know, it all had to do with when the diagnosis was, you know,
made. Right.
Made. And it's just, you know, the specification manual says very clearly not to use the H&P or the admission notes if they're written after the admission has occurred.
Right.
But admission time is not a data element.
Right.
So unless they put that in as a data element, they can't really. I just get very upset with this. I don't really think that they can be collecting that without that data.
Looking at that.
And I wish.
Well, I know there have been revisions made to that, and if you will email me, and actually we can send information out on the listserv to everybody in regard to the modifications that have been made for that pneumonia diagnosis issue.
I don't know. I mean, you're talking about the 1.04, the specifications manual. I didn't find that helpful at all in terms of clarification.
Yeah, and it might be something, now that I'm thinking, that we may have heard on a call, and I need to get clarification.
Yeah.
It's not been finalized. There,
okay.
There's certain specs that are written prematurely to you as hospitals using them for vendor purposes. So let me get back to you.
Okay. I just also find it interesting that IHI is not touching pneumonia and CMS and the Joint Commission are continuing with it.
Right.
I'm hoping that somebody will start to take a look at this pneumonia indicator, and especially with the pay-for-performance.
Yeah, they are. And I think they're, you know, even looking at the timeliness issue, et cetera. So, I mean, it is something that has been taken under advisement, and there's been a lot of discussion about it at CMS.
Oh, good. That's good to hear that.
So it's not something that they're ignoring.
Thank you.
Cindy Massetti, New York Hospital.
Hi, I don't know if you can answer the question, but, you know, we're talking about the SCIP and the appropriate care measures and the collaborative meeting that's scheduled in March.
Yeah, if you could email me directly, because we're not covering that on this call.
All right.
That would be great.
Okay.
Do you have my email address?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay.
Bill Reifer, Phelps Memorial Hospital.
Yes, hi. You know, about the working diagnosis and pneumonia bugaboo that we're all struggling with.
Right.
What we've chosen to do, hopefully to be somewhat protective, it's certainly time-consuming, but we fill out every question even if we don't think there's a working diagnosis in the hope that if it is pulled for validation, we'll have all the questions answered.
Right.
I don't know whether that helps us or not, but it seemed as if it might just mathematically.
Well, it is a way of certainly protecting you and protecting yourself. And, you know, you can continue to do that because it certainly will work. But they, as I mentioned before, they are looking at the issue because it is very problematic across the country.
Yeah, and you know, it also rubs for some of the other diagnoses. You know, I've certainly heard some of this for MIs,
uh-huh.
where a patient has an MI into the course of the admission at some point, and you're held accountable for all of the admissions, you know, elements. And I think the only response that they make is that the coding, you know, the coding really should be for the diagnosis upon admission. So then you have to get into whether there, you know, any of these should be appropriately recoded. But it just seems as if it's reasonable if you're going to have a working diagnosis kind of standard
right.
to extend that to at least to the MI diagnosis as well.
Yeah.
That's it. Just a comment.
Okay.
Thanks.
Nancy Valentine, Jacoby Medical Center.
I'm sorry to bring this up. The problem with that doing that is your rates will be lousy. You know, if you include patients who truly don't have a working diagnosis on admission and they don't get treated for 8 or 9 hours, then your rates get lousier.
Yeah.
That doesn't. I mean, I know, but then at least you won't fail validation. But what good is that?
Well, you know, and that's the other issue that everybody is concerned about too. You know, this is not about. You know, the primary goal here is for good patient care, not passing and failing and that kind of thing.
The fear does
change.
This to money.
Yeah, right. So they are, as I say, taking all of these factors under advisement, and they're working on coming up with, you know, solutions to the problem that will work best for everyone.
Okay.
And at this time, we have no questions standing by. I'll turn the conference back over to Ms. Schaefer for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Well, I just have a few things that I want to cover, and if anybody thinks of anything else that they want to ask, please feel free. You know, our hope here, again, was to really just give, you know, take a few steps back, give another overview so that we could reach out to new employees that may be working, you know, in this area. And for maybe, you know, employees that don't necessarily work in the area of data abstraction and quality improvement, but, you know, my sense is that the more people are aware of what it is that's going on in terms of quality improvement and public reporting and reimbursement, the better off we'll all be. So with that, I just want to encourage you for the upcoming conference calls, which are going to be held the last Wednesday of each month, to please invite people to listen in. People can listen in from any phone, and it doesn't really hurt. Karen will include updates on these calls in the at-a-glance, which you receive, you know, on a weekly basis. The other thing that we're going to do is we're going to send an email out on the listserv, and we're going to ask you to choose the topics for the upcoming conference calls in the priority that you feel would best suit your needs. We're going to try to cover a clinical topic on each call in terms of data abstraction issues. We will ask that you submit your questions prior to the call so that we can answer everyone's questions and that we have the information that we will need to be able to address those questions and make sure that you get the most update and pertinent information. And our hope is, of course, that, you know, collaboratively we'll all learn. And I guess that's really about it. Does anyone else have any questions?
Again, that's star one for any more questions. And we have no questions standing by.
Okay. You did receive via the listserv an evaluation. I would ask that you please complete the evaluation, send it back to us. Please include any comments, suggestions, complaints that you have, you know, on that form. And at any time, if you've got any questions, please feel free to email either Karen or myself, and we'll try to give you all the assistance that we can. Thank you for your participation, and with that, I guess we can end the call. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
I'd also like to thank everyone for your participation. This concludes our conference.